It's planting season, and it's not too late to make sure your crops grow up fed and happy. Regardless of your spring crop, Fed and Happy offers a variety of worm-casting solutions in liquid and solid form to supercharge your soil, your yields, and your profitability. For fast, vibrant germination and seedling growth, mix your seed with Fed and Happy's screened granular castings pre-drilling. The Fed and Happy liquid seed treat and extracts offer the ideal mix of soluble solids loaded with living beneficial biology, mycorrhizal fungi, humates, and more. The Fed and Happy small spreadable castings are ideal for fast, easy soil incorporation. The large offer long-term stability and soil growth. But you don't have to figure this out on your own. Just call 833-GO-WORMS to speak with our farm team experts for a fast turnaround on a custom solution for your needs. Fare better against pests, disease, drought, and other potential hazards this season with Fed and Happy worm castings. Visit fedandhappy.com for a healthy harvest and any lawn, garden, and tree care needs. Available for pickup and on-farm delivery. That's fedinhappy.com. Or call 833-GO-WORMS. Happy planting. Welcome. You're listening to Casually Baked, the podcast. Home base for the can of curious. Thanks for tuning in.
It's high time. We had a high time. Together. Together. Yes, it's high time. We had a high time.
Hi, y'all. I'm Joe, your host and cannabis lifestyle guide. And this episode is for all you parents in that back-to-school transition. While you're thinking about sports tryouts and carpools, school supplies, and fall wardrobe shopping, I've got kids and cannabis on the brain. I'm thinking about peer pressure and tween and teen experimentation. I'm thinking about Juul pod e-cigarettes and the black market vape pens, but I'm sure that's on your mind too, along with 1 million other things. That's why I'm doing you a solid by having today's guest on the podcast.
I got the bottle of wine, the high dollar kind. I got the West Coast smoke, but I better just...
Hi, Ville-Marie. Thank you so much for being in the studio with me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe.
I'm excited to introduce Ville-Marie Fraguada Narlock to you. She is a psychologist based in Chicago and is the drug education manager at Students for Sensible Drug Policy. She also runs the SSDP Just Say No, and that's K-N-O-W, peer education program. I'm grateful to have her insight today to empower us to talk to teens in a meaningful way about drugs in this contemporary culture. So, Students for Sensible Drug Policy, tell me a little bit what it's all about and how you started adding your expertise.
Yeah, so Students for Sensible Drug Policy, or SSDP, is an amazing, incredible, global nonprofit organization. It's all grassroots, built up of young people, a lot of students around the world who essentially want to end the war on drugs. And I've been involved since 2009 when I was a graduate student at Roosevelt University in Chicago studying psychology. I was working for Kathy Kane Willis at the Illinois Consortium on Drug Policy. So I was doing a little bit of drug policy research for the first time, and she happened to be the advisor of the SSDP chapter at Roosevelt, and that's sort of how I got initially connected to that organization. And I ran the chapter there as I was going through school, and kind of the rest is history. I ran the chapter, and then I was elected to the board of directors, and now I'm on staff doing this program. While I was studying at Roosevelt, I did my dissertation on drug education. And so that has sort of woven into the work that I do with SSDP.
So what was one of the most shocking things that you learned when you were working on that?
Well, I think that the thing that really sort of opened my eyes to the injustice of the war on drugs was actually as a student when I was doing my like practicum work. So I was working in a hospital setting, mm-hmm. In the psychiatric unit at a hospital in Wisconsin. And one of the things that really stood out to me was a patient who, you know, had an alcohol use disorder and very desperately wanted to go into treatment. She also had pretty severe mental health issues. You know, no resources really, didn't have right. insurance. And
no money, but total willingness. Absolutely. She wanted to get better.
Absolutely. And so there, at the time, they had, you know, some county funds and things that could help fund treatment for this person. So we went through that process to get approved for that. And she was approved for 4 days of inpatient treatment, which in no capacity is that ever enough mm-hmm. for someone who, one, wanted it and had, you know, the severe needs that she had. And that was sort of the first time I really came in you know, face-to-face contact with, like, the ways that it was impacting my work and my ability to do good work as a therapist and as a treatment provider. And so then in coming to Roosevelt, I learned a lot through doing the drug policy research. There was so much that I didn't realize. And you know, through SSDP, just, like, was opened to this whole world of just disaster, yeah. essentially, and a lot of connections being made that I didn't realize of you know, the racial, you know, forces, you know, mm-hmm. in the war on drugs and how that sort of trickles down and really how it impacts society as a whole. So,
true.
You know, it kind of took me seeing that in a way that it impacted me mm-hmm. to be able to really open my eyes to see how it's actually impacting everything else.
Right. And that's the way it goes. I mean, we all live in our own little bubbles mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden our bubbles burst and yeah. we see everything else around us and we're mm-hmm. like, holy shit, I had mm-hmm. no idea. And then you have to face it. And okay, what am I going to do? What is my responsibility in this? Mm-hmm. So I went to the SSDP website and there's already amazing content and information for anyone to thanks. Just grab and use. And so, you know, what elements on campus does SSDP have, like, if mm-hmm. a parent is sending their kid off to college for the first time, like, how do you find SSDP and get involved on your campus?
Yeah, really, it depends. A lot of times, you can go to our website and see if there's a chapter already on your campus or in your community somewhere.
How many are there? About how many schools?
There's over 300, and I believe we have about 36, give or take, international chapters or groups as well. So there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
and, you know, still growing every day. So we get new inquiries and interests all the time, which is really great. And so if you don't have a chapter near you, it's really easy to go to the website and there's just a quick form that you fill out and that gets you connected to sort of your regional, we call them movement building fellows.
Okay.
And that person will sort of get you connected and get you set up.
And hold your hand and get the process started yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right on. Mm-hmm. Well, because, you know, the thing that when I first was thinking, okay, it's back to school, mm-hmm. let's talk about kids and drugs. And for most kids, that would be a completely lame conversation mm-hmm. and they're not going to listen.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that SSDP does that's so amazing is, listen, we're not pulling any punches. We're going to tell you the good stuff, mm-hmm. the bad stuff, mm-hmm. how it affects you, how it affects your friends, how it might affect your life. These are the signs to look for. Like, so it really feels like it makes people and kids more educated in if they decide mm-hmm. to try something. They're yep. seeing the larger picture.
Mm-hmm.
That would be one of the things, me being a cool aunt with a lot of littles.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, listen, I know you're going to experiment with drugs and alcohol, mm-hmm. but be smart about it. And this organization will empower you with all the information mm-hmm. that you need to make good decisions.
Yeah. And that's exactly, you know, what we set out to do is, you know, through, like I said, I had done my dissertation on drug education and, you know, we had done some focus groups with young people who had gone through the traditional drug education sort of DARE type programming. And really, I just wanted to know, like, what about that worked? What, you know, what didn't work? And what needs to be different? Mm-hmm. And so that was one of the major things that came out of that work, was seeing that, like, we don't want to be, you know, young people don't want to be talked down to. They want to know the real facts so that they can make their own informed decisions mm-hmm. and have that sort of autonomy to do that. And so that's, you know, that was one of the main things that I wanted to focus on for this program, is to ensure that we put something out there that allowed, you know, really anyone, like you said, to be able to come in and see. And you know, we pulled from so many really amazing resources that have been, you know, putting out this this education for a while, and just sort of condensed it in a way that I think is digestible and, you know, easy for people to access.
You know, and I think the best part is the simplicity of, you know, when we were in school, I'm 42, mm-hmm. so ours was definitely the DARE, just say N-O. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the fact that you can just change the no that we're working with, and that really is the difference. Somebody mm-hmm. telling you no versus somebody telling you, hey, know all the information.
Exactly.
And kids are so much smarter now. I mean, mm-hmm. they have access to information mm-hmm. at a much younger age than mm-hmm. we ever did. And, you know, I have littles that will come to me and they're in junior high and they're already being pressured to send nude Snapchats. Mm,
yeah.
And when a kid, a boy that they like, asks for their phone number instead of their Snapchat chat handle, they think like, oh my God, he's such a great guy. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, they live in a completely different world. Yeah, and so it's like, okay, there's a group out there that mm-hmm. is taking all of the facts and then having other students, mm-hmm. their peers, like, format this program.
Exactly.
I'm like, it's brilliant.
Yeah, and that was another, you know, factor that came out of the dissertation work, is that they – young people want to be involved in the development of this kind of stuff. They want to know that their voice is being heard and that it makes sense for what they need. And so when we were developing this program, there was no way I was going to do it without the involvement of other SSD peers and, mm-hmm. and our young people and students. And so, you know, most of what you see there has been contributed by, you know, all, you know, the resources and the kind of information that we put on there has been, you know, through their work and what they said that they wanted. So
I love that. So just so you know, the Just Say No program that Ville Marie put together, which, by the way, how old were you when you first started working on this program?
How old was I? I was in grad school, technically, you know, because I consider sort of my dissertation as part of like the brainchild of those two. So
yeah.
29,
okay.
27.
Well, and I still feel like you have street cred with college kids at that age. So,
sure. And
you know,
I was still part of SSDP. So I was a member as a graduate student. So I was very much, you know, involved in the organization as a member while I was doing all of this work too. So, yeah.
Well, I love that because, you know, the benefits of this program are the fact that the kids are learning the facts from their peers, right? Mm-hmm. So the kids, they helped put this information together, and then they also teach it to one another.
Yep, and that's exactly, it's kind of a two-tiered program. So there's a training component. So any of our members that want to become what we call peer educators will go through the training curriculum, which is actually pretty comprehensive. It is a lot of work for them to go through. There's about 13 lessons that they complete. It's all online, so they can kind of do it on their own time. And they answer, you know, sort of response questions for each lesson. Once they become certified, then they're able to sort of go out into their community and share the knowledge in the drug education modules that we have a number of available online, and also,
and
you know, other harm reduction information.
And these are anything from alcohol to nicotine to pharmaceutical drugs to street drugs.
Yeah, yeah. So we have, alcohol, caffeine, cannabis, nicotine, psilocybin. You know, it goes on and on. So we have a lot of different ones, and there's more being created by students all the time. We just finished a salvia module. So
yeah, I mean, they can just come to you and say, okay, like mm-hmm. this is kind of what's going around on campus now. We need to add this to the mix.
Exactly.
So
yep.
That everybody gets the ins and outs of the drugs that they may come into contact with on their own campus.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And there's sometimes that we come across something that someone's interested in, and it can be difficult to put together a module on because there's not a whole lot of information out there. And a lot of that is due to, of course, prohibition, that we can't do the research and can't get the information that we need. So,
well, the other thing that I really like about this is when somebody doesn't want to do something and they know in their gut it's really not right for them, mm-hmm. but they don't really have the words to put together an argument as to mm-hmm. why it's not right for them. So I love this program for that reason, too, that it allows people to feel empowered to speak intelligently about why they do or do not want to participate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, in some ways that kind of, you know, again, it gives people autonomy and it kind of puts the responsibility back on their hands to learn this information and determine like, yeah, this one's not my thing. You know, that's because of X, Y, Z reason. So, yeah, absolutely.
And I think another thing that's really exciting about it is that you're also teaching them how to spot symptoms of mm-hmm. when somebody's had an overdose. So, mm-hmm. you know, I remember my college parties and, you know, there's a ton of drinking and there are drugs and you would see some girl in, you know, crumpled in the bathroom somewhere and, you know, you're trying to help. I mean, that's what girls do. We all try to help, but it's mm-hmm. like, if you know, you know, you've had a little bit of training and education and you know kind of the system that you need to do, kind of like we all know to stop, drop, and roll if we catch on fire.
Exactly.
Like, what do we do when we see somebody that's had an overdose? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm, besides mm-hmm. panic, like, what's the right thing to do?
Exactly, exactly. And you know, the reality is oftentimes they're doing it among their peers. And so, again, that kind of puts that responsibility back on them and their friends and each other to mm-hmm. to look out for each other too and know what it might look like if someone's having a challenging experience with a substance or if they're in a point they're maybe going into like a medical emergency versus just like someone's had a little too much and sleeping or you know whatever there's differences to look out for. So that was really important for us to put out too.
So explain the idea of harm reduction, because that's a big part of what you teach in the Just Say No program. Mm-hmm.
You know, essentially harm reduction, as it applies to drug use, is reducing the harms related to using a substance. And that can be harms from the substance itself. That can be harms from the way you're using it. So, for example, if you're an injection drug user, a person who uses drugs, you know, with a needle, what that might look like using, you know, clean syringes and sterile syringes and excuse me, and things like this, to where you're doing it, to if you have you know, underlying mental health conditions and how that might interact with drug use. So there's so many different things that we look out for, as well as like societal harms, criminalization, you know, so it kind of like spans a whole big thing and providing, you know, as much information as we can to ensure that if someone is going to use something, that they're doing so in a way that's going to minimize those harms. But I also like to, you know, for people who've never heard of harm reduction, I like to sort of take it out of the context of drug use and think about just sort of everyday things that we do that reduce harm. So, for example, seatbelts reduce harm associated with driving or riding in a car. You know, before we had them, there were, you know, more, you know, if we had an accident, there was more harm
death and
done.
Destruction.
Exactly, exactly. So, and then we got seatbelts. And that has helped reduce the, you know, the harm or the dangers of riding in a car. Even something like sunscreen, if you know, if you're going to be outside, you put sunscreen on to protect yourself from UV rays and things like this. So there's a lot of ways that we already practice harm reduction just on a daily basis. We wear shoes, you know, to help our feet not get all torn up by the road or whatever. So there's a lot of ways that we do this on the day-to-day.
Harm reduction strategies that are just practical for our personal well-being, mm-hmm. but then harm reduction also as a social movement. So
yes.
we're teaching people how to take better care of ourselves and our peers and the people that we love, but then also how to care for our community and,
exactly.
and fellow citizens that deserve the same rights and opportunities as we do.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right. I dig it. How can we take these principles of harm reduction as it relates mm-hmm. to parents or responsible adults talking mm-hmm. to teens? Because you've had this experience, mm-hmm. are there certain, I don't know, certain a style of dialogue or certain mm-hmm. kind of like buzzwords and catchphrases that will resonate mm-hmm. with kids and have them actually stop and have the conversation and not roll their eyes and shut the door and lock it and...
Yeah, I think the first step is for parents and caring adults to really put some work in and educating yourselves too. There's, you know, even if it's going to our website and checking out our resources, I think there's a lot of, you know, it is, you know, available for anyone to access. Because there's just a lot that I think it's important to have the knowledge of going into that kind of conversation.
Because you're right, these kids know most of that information.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've learned more from our students than I could have ever learned in graduate school or anything. Yeah. So yes, that is totally true. And then it's all about approaching it with compassion and being open. And, you know, I think it's not just one conversation. It's, you know, sort of being open from the start. I think oftentimes parents are so afraid to even broach the topic because they're worried that either, like you said, that their young person is just going to close the door in their face and not engage. But I think there's so many...
Or they're afraid of what they might find out.
That too. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think there's so many opportunities that you can kind of like start, you know, broaching the subject. If you're watching TV with your child or, you know, young person and something comes up that is associated, like being able to use that as a conversation starter. Mm-hmm. Or if you're, you know, walking around the city or your town and, you know, you even just like going by a bar or something, you know. Just
yeah, passing by a dispensary or going by a bar.
Yep.
And yeah,
mm-hmm.
and letting it be natural conversation exactly. versus, okay, sit down.
We're going to have the talk.
We're going to have the responsible drug education conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you think personal anecdotes fit into that? Because I think mm-hmm. a lot of parents get nervous to tell their kids what all they did because they don't want it to feel like justification that their kids can. But mm-hmm. I personally feel like those anecdotes offer almost like a bridge mm-hmm. to the kid. So in your experience, what do you think the best move is?
I think it can be really helpful. I think, you know, it's important obviously to know your child or the young person you're trying to get to and how that might impact them. But I think it can be really useful to kind of, for one, like humanize and normalize the situation and like remind them that like, you know, you were once a young person also, and maybe there's some sort of equal footing that you can find or some things that you can relate to there, while also acknowledging that things are different, that there's generational differences. Like you mentioned, you know, young people are so different now than, mm-hmm. than we were at their age. And
yeah, peer pressure is out of control now.
Yeah, yeah. Then social media certainly doesn't help with that. So I think, you know, it's about being honest and open. And if people, if they do ask questions, to be prepared to address them honestly, because they'll see through the bullshit too. So,
yeah. Yes, they do.
So yeah. And you know, I say this to our students too, that, you know, self-disclosure can be super, super beneficial and super important in the work that we do in sort of advancing, you know, knowledge about drug use and harm reduction and the war on drugs and trying to make change. And, you know, some people can sort of take advantage of your self-disclosure in ways that can be problematic. And there's also the issue of privilege and some people being more at risk when they self-disclose their drug use, for example. So I think that can kind of trickle down a little bit to just having a conversation with your young person and carefully, you know, determining what is important for them to know in that context. And again, without bullshitting, while being honest, also being sort of thoughtful about how you share what you're going to share.
And I really think having just targeted conversations as they come, where, you know, maybe we're talking about nicotine. I mean, these Juul pods, you know, there's a pack of cigarettes in one pod. Mm-hmm. And I know young people that have a pod a day habit. Mm-hmm. And it's very scary for their parents. And, you know, they take them away. And then you are visibly watching a child go through withdrawals as a 13-year-old. That's an instance where it's like, okay, we're tackling nicotine right now. And when we can get this through, then let's talk about this. But I feel like trying to talk about all of it at once is I think it just waters the message down. And so it's really talking about those, the ones that are real big in your face, like, you know, what's on the front burner, what's the emergency.
Right.
So do you have any examples of positive impact stories that have happened on campus, some of your kids that you can share with us?
Yeah. So one of the first students to become certified, they had a presentation. It was I think it was our MDMA module that they presented. And it was the first one. So it was kind of exciting that, you know, the first one that was officially presented within, you know, our program as it exists now. And they basically shared with me, they kind of emailed me after, very excited, because there was someone who had attended who, if I remember correctly, had been kind of skeptical or wasn't really sure about all of this, and came up to them afterward and sort of shared how much of an impact that just, you know, that one session had, that they learned so much that they're now able to go, you know, share this really important information with their friends. And then there have been others where people have been skeptical of, for example, harm reduction. And this is something that our members face a lot, is people asking questions about harm reduction and kind of thinking that it's enabling drug use, and which is a very common
misconception. Exactly.
And so another student was able to talk one-on-one with a person who came to one of their presentations and actually shared some of the resources from our training curriculum with that person, was able to have a really open, honest conversation and sort of get them, you know, kind of shift some of the thinking a little bit and understanding of harm reduction. So there's been some really, really great things that our students have been able to do with, you know, having these resources available to them.
And I feel like, because the same thing will happen to me, I will get an email or a text message from someone saying, hey, what you talked about, I really needed to hear. I was able to share this with my mom, or I've been able to talk to my wife about this, and now we're going to go to the doctor. And so, you know, those sorts of things, they're, you know, those small wins are, it's the consistency of those little small wins that really build up and change a culture and build a movement.
Yeah, and it's in a couple of cases, it's led to people, you know, peers asking for more training on how to use naloxone and how to recognize an overdose, so that, you know, our students have been able to go back and do more of that, because people are just really, really wanting that and wanting to be able to do something about, you know, obviously the overdose crisis that we're in right now, and being able to help their peers in that way.
I loved going through and seeing all the different information that you share for each subject matter. So you kind of just like give a broad overview of, like, you know, I guess you probably have like the bones of what you share about each drug or substance.
Yeah. So for each drug education module, we go through sort of looking at prevalence rates of use. So that's one of the first things. And so we use, you know, things like the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, or the Monitoring the Future survey, which are very large longitudinal sort of studies that gathers a lot of data on drug use trends. And so we use that to, in addition to having whatever group is presenting include information about their own campus.
So you have national and localized stats.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Just to kind of provide an overview of like what does the trend for this particular substance look like around the country, around the world, in our community.
Yeah, I think it's great to get that snapshot.
Yeah, yeah. And then we go into like the history, so how it was developed and how it's come about in our society, in our culture. We go into the legal aspect of the drug, so any sort of laws both historically and currently that impact or interact with the use of that particular drug, and sometimes what the penalties are. Again, that's another piece where the local information can be included. And then, of course, we go into like what the drug is, what it's made out of, what the different components are, how someone might use it, and how the different methods of routes of administration might impact one's experience, what sort of the positive or the beneficial effects, the neutral effects and the potentially like negative effects might be, both kind of short-term and long-term of the substance. We go into then harm reduction for that particular substance, and we do this for each one. Again, looking at like the routes of administration, like I mentioned, and sometimes dosing if that kind of information is available, and then how to recognize an emergency associated with that drug and kind of what to do. We also kind of, because I'm kind of a nerd, I like the history of the drug, like I mentioned, so any sort of notable figures that might be associated with like the development of the drug or sort of pop culture sorts mm-hmm. of things, mm-hmm. just because I think that's fun on a contextual sort of societal level. And then we kind of talk about, again, harm reduction in general, what that means. We talk about drug set and setting and how that impacts one's experience. So the drug being, the drug itself, anything else you might be combining it with. Set being sort of like your own body person, and that includes mindset. So if you've like had a good meal that day or not, if you're feeling really tired, if you're feeling extra depressed that day, and how all that might impact the experience. And then, of course, the setting. So using something like in your living room is going to be a lot different than using it at a party or a club or at the park. So, mm-hmm. And how that all might impact one's experience and setting, also considering like the legal setting and sort of historical, societal sort of factors too. So there's a lot of that. So that's kind of the general overview. I might be missing a couple of components. So yeah.
I love it too, because one of the practical things that I saw on the alcohol module was the picture of the red Solo cup.
Oh, right.
And pointing like, if there's booze in this cup, this is what one serving is. Mm-hmm. And if there's beer, this is one serving. And if there's wine, this is one serving. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that is brilliant, mm-hmm. because every college campus and every group of kids that are throwing a party, you are drinking out of a red Solo cup, no mm-hmm. matter what it is they're pouring in it. So mm-hmm. helping people formulate an idea of mm-hmm. what a serving is of all these different types of alcohol
yep.
when you're that young, because mm-hmm. Our parents aren't teaching us that. I mean, yeah. And so that is part, I think that was part of the harm reduction section exactly. of that module.
Yep. Yep. And I will say that the Solo company does say that wasn't the intention of the shape of their cup, but it is very close.
Yeah.
it's a fun coincidence, I suppose. But yeah.
Based on what you've learned, what advice would you give parents with teens and tweens who are experiencing peer pressure mm-hmm. of proportions that we didn't see?
Yeah, it is tricky. I think, there's so much that, again, with social media and having a computer like in our pocket mm-hmm. all the time, and just having so much access to everyone and everything, it can be really hard to even see all the things that our young people are faced with. And so I think, again, trying to have open lines of communication is really important, and, having a trusting relationship. And that can be hard. Family dynamics are messy. So even if you're not the person that your child trusts the most, that, if they have an adult or a fun aunt or, someone mm-hmm. else that that they have that they can, you know, a sounding board is super important, whether it's a teacher, you know, counselor or whatever. And I think, you know, just by nature of that time of development, that's kind of part of how we grow and learn about ourselves too. So it's super terrifying, I think, for parents to know that that's happening with their,
yeah,
with their young person. And I think it's a good time to be able to reflect on what things were like for you at that age. Cause even though we didn't have all of the super technology that we have now, there was still a lot of peer pressure, right? There was a lot of.
Yeah, it was different, I guess.
I think the nature of it was different, but young people now don't know any different.
Right.
So. Yeah.
So it's all relative.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. And like remembering that, you know, what sorts of things helped you get through that period of your life? What kind of helped keep you grounded in the midst of all of the pressures of, you know, peers and school and other activities and just life in general? And tapping into that a little bit and being able to use that, because by nature, as humans, like those things will be constant.
Mm-hmm.
The technology and things will change, but when it comes to like connecting as human beings, that kind of thing, I think stays pretty constant.
Yeah, I'm thinking as you're talking about that, I'm like, okay, when something would happen to me at school, like would I come home and talk to my parents about it? Would I go in my room? I think I did a lot of writing, but. You know, I think anymore, parents that can allow their children to make the decision, like have mm-hmm. the conversation.
Absolutely.
And then give them the space to make the decision, because mm-hmm. so many parents end up fixing it,
right,
or telling them what decision to make, mm-hmm. or and then they get to college. And they're really shitty at making decisions and standing up for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. I think definitely, like I said, having that open line of communication, if possible, is great, because when they do come to you, it's like, oh, yes. It's such a wonderful moment. But yeah, definitely being able to like provide whatever knowledge or support you're able to, with the sort of expectation that you're going to let that young person like make that choice or do what they need to do to get through that, you know, situation, whatever mm-hmm. the case may be. And, you know, oftentimes, at least as was the case with me, if something was going on at school, I wasn't necessarily going to my parents first. And I did have a pretty open, you know, trusting relationship mm-hmm. with them. I was talking to my friends.
Yeah.
Right. And that's another reason why the sort of peer component of our program is super, super important, and ensuring that young people can kind of take that responsibility and have the kind of be empowered to educate themselves and take that on for themselves and their friends is super important.
Has there been something in your program where you do have that peer discussion of how are we dealing with bullying and peer pressure and things like that? Is that an open dialogue going on? And have you, you know, gleaned any tips from the kids?
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's kind of like an ongoing thing. I think, you know, we're an organization of young people that talk about drugs all the time, you know, whether it's drug use or policy or whatever, we're talking about it a lot. And it's super, what I found is that it is super important to young people to take care of each other. They want to be good friends and be able to support each other. And they're doing things like if they are going to use, like, you know, having one of the group who isn't going to use or is going to use in a way that they're not going to be, you know, unavailable to address anything that comes up. So they're taking a lot of really good measures to take care of each other. And I think that's one of the most important sort of pieces of our organization as a whole, and also of this program. That's something that is super important for young people too. I mean, there's sort of like, you know, we talk about the benefits of like team sports and mm-hmm. things like that. I mean, I'm not saying that drug use is a team sport necessarily, but I'm taking that concept of how you know, being part of a team and looking out for each other tends to be really important for development of some young people and how they interact and socialize. And I think that kind of concept is something that they can sort of also pick up on when they're just hanging out with friends and looking out for each other in that way. And they're kind of like group.
Absolutely. Their tribe. We do want to take care of our tribe.
Exactly.
And, you know, the old saying, it takes a village. I mean, I feel like it takes a village for me to adult. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm constantly mm-hmm. calling friends for support or, you know, needing advice or whatever. Like,
absolutely.
You know, this idea that when we become an adult that mm-hmm. that we should be good on our own.
Yeah, no.
You know, like that is something that is a complete farce.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't matter how old you get, you always need your parents.
Yeah.
You know, you always need the support of a friend. You always need somebody that's gonna pick up the phone when you call in the middle of the night and say, exactly. "Hey, I fucked up and I need you to come get me."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
mm-hmm.
if you don't have those sorts of people around you, then you're not hanging out with the right people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think mm-hmm. for me, that's a big deal when I'm talking to my littles. Like,
yeah.
how good do you feel about your friends?
Mm-hmm.
My dad would always say, you're not going to bring them up to your level. They'll bring you down to theirs. And mm-hmm. so it's that team concept. You're mm-hmm. only as mm-hmm. strong as your weakest link.
That's
like,
right.
We can go crazy on the cliches, but, you know, the concept is true. Like,
yeah.
how confident you are with your community
mm-hmm.
kind
mm-hmm.
of will show you how safe you are to do different things and be vulnerable.
Yeah.
So is there a modified program for teens and tweens? Like, are y'all working on something with schools? Like, how can we get this information to younger children mm-hmm. faster?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we do have some high school chapters. So we have a couple of high school students that have gone through the training to some degree. We also did a sort of tried out a little pilot at a school in Denver, Colorado, as a middle school and high school. So we had a couple of interns who helped me kind of adapt our drug education modules for that group, for that age range, and delivered it throughout the school year last year. So there's definitely like the option of
okay.
kind of adapting, you know.
So there is a pilot program. So if people were interested, they
mm-hmm,
could,
mm-hmm.
would they reach out to you? Would they reach out on the website?
Totally. Yeah, they could reach out to me. There's also, so the Drug Policy Alliance has, and they've had a program called Safety First for a while. And it's actually a really good resource for parents. They have a pamphlet called Safety First. It's available in a bunch of languages that, you know, I think it's a good kind of starting point for parents who are concerned and want to be more open and honest rather than like punishing and that kind of taking it that kind of direction. They have also piloted a school version of their program in New York. And I think they are also going to be running it in a few schools here in California this year. There is hope, you know, out there for getting more sort of harm reduction, honest, science-based education to young people. And we're doing what we can to make sure that that's out there. You know, our information is available on our website. It's open for anyone to access. I know DPA has their pamphlet and then their curriculum is, you know, since it's in pilot phase, it's not accessible. It's something that you'd have to get through them, but there's stuff out there.
Okay.
Anyone can definitely reach out to me and I'm happy to, you know, talk with them and work with them and kind of figure out what might be best for what their needs are.
Well, I'll get some of those links from you mm-hmm. and put together in the show notes some, like, here's your back to school survival kit.
Perfect.
kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Is there anything that the program's about that I totally missed the mark on and that we need to cover?
I think that pretty much covers it. Our program is really designed to work with young people, meet them where they're at, and provide them with the knowledge that they might need to just kind of like walk through this world of prohibition and be able to help their friends along the way.
And I really think we may have to have another conversation sometime and talk about the criminal and social justice aspects of
absolutely
of everything that's happening and how the students are getting involved in that regard.
Would love to, for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with me today.
Thanks so much, Joe. It was great.
I got the bottle of wine, the high dollar kind. I got the West Coast smoke, but I better just take one.
I hope our chat opened your eyes to how valuable the Students for Sensible Drug Policy program can be for all of us. You know, the SSDP believes that students should be an overall part of any campus and community prevention and intervention strategy. And it's true, they should. The SSDP Peer Education Program, it seeks to empower our students to analyze the relationship between drug policy and drug use by providing evidence-based drug information. After I finished talking to Vilmarie, she shared with me a blog article that she had written that she worked on with some of her students. And I'm going to include it in the show notes, but you know, there are a couple of very important things that kept standing out. And it's that these kids say, we won't lie to our parents unless they make us feel like we have to. We would much rather be comfortable telling the truth. So when these kids are making the decision to have that educational conversation with their parents versus the other way around, they're going about it the exact same way that you should go about talking to your kids. They are providing their parents with facts. And when they know that there's a chance that it's going to be a heated conversation, they're emailing the information and giving their parents time with it and then getting together and having a conversation, a mutually respectful conversation. That's the right move either way you slice it. Whether you're a parent wanting to talk to your kids or whether you're a kid wanting to talk to your parents about drug use, we have to make sure that everyone is on the same page from an educational perspective. So I really hope that you will use ssdp.org. There's a lot of information out on the web, but it's not all accurate. It's not all up to date. And it is the mission of the SSDP to make sure that they are providing the right information and that it's organized in a great way. And I'm telling you, the sky's the limit. Check it out and let me know. Let me know how it goes. If you're a parent and your teen's going off to college and you want to have this conversation before they leave, maybe they're already there and you're a little bit nervous. Know that open dialogue is what they want and it's what works. Another reason the work SSDP is doing is so powerful is that students turn to their peers first when they encounter and experiment with drug use. And so, like Vilmarie said, SSDP meets students where they are. So I hope you listening in on my chat with Vilmarie taught you something you didn't know and maybe gave you access to some resources to help you empower the young people in your life to develop into conscious and empowered citizens and future leaders. Together. Thank you for subscribing. Please share this episode with a concerned parent or adult that has young people in their life that could absolutely use this information. Knowledge is power, people. Like I always say, puff, puff, pass it on. Together. Casually Baked, the podcast, was created, recorded, and produced by yours truly. Editing and sound design are in the capable hands of Arnav Gupta. The podcast theme music is by my highly talented friend Seth Walker. If you aren't familiar with Seth's music, you can find High Time on his album Gotta Get Back wherever you're buying your music these days. I know he didn't create High Time for me, but it sure as shit sounds like he did, right? I hope you'll tune in next time. Thanks for hanging out. And don't miss next week's podcast. I recently toured Steep Hill Mendo out in the Yorkville Highlands in Mendocino County. Amazing dudes with a gorgeous farm. It's impressive stuff. So I practiced my hand with my new gimbal So got some video footage I'll be sharing with you in the show notes and also on our YouTube channel at Casually Baked. Not much going on there right now unless you're into all of my educational videos that are free, which you should be. So get on over to YouTube and subscribe to our channel. The video portion of Casually Baked the podcast is coming together. Got more videos set up happening in the studio this week. Pretty soon you'll have the option of listening to the podcast or watching it all unfold.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
How do cannabis CEOs balance growth and optimization strategies? What is THCO, Delta 10, and CBNA, and why should you care about these minor cannabinoids? And why is an endocannabinoid system covered in medical school? Most people think they're up to date in trends in the cannabis industry, but they're about 6 weeks behind. Learn about what is truly next in the cannabis space by joining myself, Brian Fields, and Kellen Finney every week on the Dime Podcast, and of course, on PodConnects.